As the world grapples with climate change, the push for cleaner energy has never been more urgent. Nigeria is heavily reliant on fossil fuels and faces rising pollution levels and environmental degradation. But a shift is possible. With innovative solutions and a commitment to decarbonization, the country can retrace its carbon footprints towards a sustainable energy future. The question is, how do we make this transition? And what role can businesses and individuals play in driving change?
Hi, I'm Francis Jacko, your host on today's episode of NERG TV. Now, as Nigeria strives to achieve net zero emissions by 2060, now is the time to have in-depth conversations around decarbonization. Now, decarbonization is not just an isolated subject, it affects every one of us. Because if Nigeria fails to retrace its carbon footprint, an entire value chain will be affected. Our livelihoods will be affected, and every sector that depends on renewables for survival will be affected. So this is a very, very critical issue. And with me in the studio to discuss this subject is a power sector expert. He is Mr. Chibeze Eke, and the CEO of Sisolar Renewable Energy Company. And Sisolar is in the vanguard of retracing Nigeria's carbon footprints through various products that they have in the renewable sector. Welcome, Mr. Chibeze.
Thank you, Francis.
All right. So let's just kick off with this discussion with decarbonization, because most people don't even know why we are advocates for clean energy. So if we want to retrace Nigeria's carbon footprints, why is decarbonization so important?
Oh, decarbonization is so important in so many ways. You know, imagine a country where we are dealing with, issues like flooding in the south. We're dealing with issues like flooding, even in the north, like in Borno State. We have issues where farmers can't really go to farm again because, so apart from the security issues, there's also the climate change impact, right? Because you don't get rain as expected. So climate change is real. And, decarbonization is important because we have put in so much carbon in the atmosphere. It's affecting the ozone layer, and it's also affecting our ability to live with the environment. And the environment that we have is what we have. If we cannot maintain it, it will not be there to sustain us. You and I breathe in oxygen, we breathe out carbon dioxide, you know, but then the trees breathe in carbon dioxide and breathe out oxygen. So imagine a situation where we're cutting trees abruptly, we're not managing our ecosystem. Definitely there's an imbalance that affects our economy.
Now some would say we are too far gone, like the greenhouse gas emissions and everything. We've had that conversation for years. So is it even possible to roll back the damage we've done?
Oh, definitely. Some people would say, for example, if you have malaria, you can go and take a malaria medicine to address it, right? So that's more like a corrective action. You could also have some measures where you're doing something to avoid having malaria. Maybe you're using insecticides, or you're ensuring that you don't go to areas where there's mosquito gathering, right? The same thing happens in terms of climate change. So you have climate mitigation, which is more on the corrective side. We're trying to react to the impact of climate change. And then you also have climate adaptation. We're trying to be a bit more proactive. We're trying to say, how can we ensure that in order to not have flood happen somewhere, let's go and build some infrastructure that addresses it. But if we're talking about mitigation now, we already know that climate change is already happening. And we're trying to say, for example, how can we use renewable energy solutions like solar to address and mitigate the impact of climate change, such that when you install maybe solar in a community or for a business or in a home, there is an equivalent number of trees that you have indirectly planted, because you have avoided the need for unclean energy from petrol and diesel sources, because you now have a clean energy source. So because of that, there's an amount of tons of CO2 that you have abated, you have reduced, you have mitigated. And because of that, we are trying to see how we can get to a neutral position and address climate change.
Thank you very much. That's very important. Now it keys into your vision as a company. You are the CEO of Sisolar. So now your vision is to retrace Nigeria's carbon footprint. So can you tell us a little bit more about that and what your experience has been?
I would say, most of us don't even know what our carbon footprint is, right? Most of us don't even know that from our activities, whether it's our economic activities, our environmental activities, or even social activities, we are, affecting the environment, right? So retracing our carbon footprint simply means, going to places and making impact, whether it's in communities, whether it's in institutions, whether it's even in homes, right? And saying, this is where you are today. and this is how we can help you to retrace your steps so that you can actually understand your impact on the environment and what you need to do so that Nigeria can achieve our 2060 carbon neutrality goal. So what that simply means is for us, we do that by using renewable energy like solar in ensuring that businesses, communities, and the likes are aware that there's an impact of the activities, and by installing solar in their communities or in their schools or anywhere, you're actually able to be at the forefront of addressing your own carbon footprint, because definitely there is something that you are doing because you're running a generator, there are the fumes you typically see, those are going to the ozone layer, those are affecting the environment. So we are at the forefront of really addressing that as an organization.
Thank you very much. It's quite laudable to know that besides the profit, because obviously you're in the business of making profit, but you are also doing some kind of sensitization to make people aware. Now, what are the dangers if we say we don't want to be frontal about rolling back our carbon footprints? What are the dangers if we maintain the status quo, like we don't change anything and we just remain like this?
The dangers are immense. The dangers are immense. Africa today stands to lose a lot, but also gain a lot if we actually plug into the energy transition. And what is the energy transition? It's basically saying we need to move away from the old technologies, the typical, the traditional ways of doing things, right? Because we've seen the impact on the environment and we need to look forward. In a world today where everybody's talking about artificial intelligence, machine learning, Internet of Things, Nigeria has come of age in 2025 to say that, you know what, we need to be on the global stage to make an impact. And what that simply means is, in order for us to achieve that, it's not just by the words, it's also by the actions. So the good thing is that as a country, Nigeria was part of the Mission 300 that happened in Tanzania. I was at that event, and a lot of our stakeholders were there. And Nigeria has committed to an energy compact, which simply means that we have signed up to say, look, we are going to do what it takes to address carbon emission. And what are some of those things? Some of those things are, for example, saying that renewable energy is going to be half of the energy mix in the country. So it's a very, very daring proposition, but it's not impossible. We just need to come back home, decompose it to the little actions we all need to do on the public side, on the private side, and then figure out how to do it together.
It's interesting you mentioned the government, the part of the government, because if we are to make this sustainable, government has a key role to play. So from your perspective as a player in the sector, what do you feel can be done on the policy level to institutionalize this compact that has been signed?
I think one thing I've learned is in order to achieve reasonable change, most times you need to think differently and you need to act differently. So what that means is we need to be open to new things, right? The world is moving on. We need to be part of this world that is moving on. And I think that already in Nigeria, the government has taken very, very bold steps in the sense that we've been able to leverage some support from the World Bank and African Development Bank to ensure that millions of Nigerians are impacted, because you'll be surprised to know that about half of the country live in darkness. And, with the lack of energy access, you can't be productive. People can't study at night in rural communities. Women can't give birth safely at night. You even struggle to, safely store vaccines for immunization. So the government is doing a lot in the health space, in the education space, by supporting renewable energy service companies like C-Solar and the others to say, you know what, if you go to some areas and, you provide power in communities that haven't had electricity before, they've not had any poles in those communities, we would come and support you with some sort of grant to encourage you to go and do more. So that is already what has happened in the past few years. And right now we are a position where there is going to be an increase in that impact, because a lot of stakeholders have come together on Mission 300 to say, you know what, how do we ensure that our actions are all aligned to ensure that out of the 600 million Africans that lack access to electricity, at least half of them, which is 300 million people, can be electrified by the year 2030. And like you and I know, Nigeria is the giant of Africa. Sure. We have the most to gain and we have the most to lose. And we basically are a large share of that population. So there's going to be a lot of impact, especially for Nigeria.
Okay, thank you. That's quite, it's quite gratifying to know. Now, there's a lot of what's in it for me. This scenario is a what's in it for me situation. Now, we are seeing want to change mindsets and we towards adoption of clean energy. people are going to ask, how does it affect them? For instance, what's the impact of carbon emissions on public health? And how does it affect businesses in terms of being more profitable if they adopt it? How would you speak to that?
So, you know, sometimes there's some cities you go to in Nigeria, I will not mention names, but once you get out of the airport, you just feel the air is different. The air is not so comfortable. That is already the impact of carbon emission. When you think from a public health perspective, right, not being able to breathe well, you know, you have issues with respiratory systems, not being able to have clean water, you know, carbon, you know, climate change affects a whole lot in our ecosystem. But then what is good is that, you know, like I mentioned earlier on, if you're not even able to store vaccines properly, imagine giving vaccines that are not in the right states, you're already going to affect the little baby. So, you know, carbon emission, climate change, and all of them are really, really affecting us. You know, if you think back in recent years, for example, here in Abuja, we say, oh, wow, February is hot. You know, the temperature is really hot. Just a little increase in our temperature affects our health, affects our state of mind, affects our productivity. So we really have a lot to do to retrace our carbon footprint to ensure that at least we are neutral in terms of how we impact the environment. And it's not a one individual thing. It's not a one government thing. It's something that the whole world has to come together to first identify as a problem and then take action on it. And that's why you have the Conference of Parties, the COP that happens annually. And you have a lot of interest now to say, look, climate change is a major problem. We all need to put hands together to address it.
Thank you. Quite deep. Now, this brings me to this question. In terms of profitability, now businesses, they might say the switch might increase their running costs. And then for the private individual, I know we've had this conversation before, but how do we mitigate the cost burden on consumers who want to make a switch?
So the good thing is that the government has really understood this problem and they're at the forefront of addressing it. The Rural Education Agency of Nigeria, the RBA, has been able to coordinate a lot of funding support from the World Bank and AFDB and even the UN, right, for this purpose. So what that has done is that for companies like us who have to support people to transition, the burden most times of the upfront cost is something that with their support, it is alleviated. So it makes it easier for Nigerians to be able to pay something that is even cheaper than what they will have spent on petrol or on diesel. And then that way they're able to really transition to cleaner sources that are more reliable and more sustainable. Imagine when, you know, your cost of power, you know, is very, very high compared to other people in Africa. Even when you're producing, you can't really export. But if you can bring down the cost, it helps the economy because we can then leverage that advantage to be able to start thinking of not just consuming what we produce, but even exporting what we produce. And for this economy, we are really in need of that so that we can actually leverage the opportunity we have to grow the economy.
Okay. Very insightful. Now, I've asked the question before when during the previous interview. Now, renewables, when people mention renewables, what comes to mind is solar. What about complementing with wind and with hydropower? Do we have those options? Solar, is it mainly solar?
So you'll be surprised. I mean, we have the large hydros, right? We have the Kainji, we have the Shiroro. Mm. Those are renewable energy sources. Mm. So currently, about 20% of the energy that is supplying the national grid is coming from renewable energy sources like the large hydros. Yes, we have gas as well, which is a transition fuel, but how do we ensure that if we're going to have 50% of our energy from renewable sources, that means we need a whole lot more renewable sources. So that means that in different parts of the country, we need to ask ourselves, what renewable energy sources are in abundance? In the north, there's a lot of solar irradiation. There's a lot of, you know, sunlight. In some other parts of the country, you have, you know, small hydros. You have, you know, small hydros that can give you 20 megawatts, 30 megawatts here and there, right? And then, you know, in terms of wind, there's a lot of wind potential, especially in Katsina. So how do we harness all these, you know, renewable energy sources to ensure that we transition to sources that are that have less impact in terms of carbon emission in the environment, and then allows us to really participate in this energy transition?
Thank you. So in terms of you've partnered the REA for several projects. They're currently developing solar mini grids in Adamawa and Kano. Can you speak to that and the impact that you feel the projects will have on the underserved communities in those areas?
Oh, great. So the REA has really done a lot in supporting a lot of players like us. We are working with REA through a program called the African Mini Grid Program. It's a program funded by the UN and Global Energy Fund, and Rocky Mountain is also supporting that. But the idea here is to really, like I had said, scale up the work that is already being done. And how we are doing that is by going to two communities. It's not just us, there are about a few other people like us doing the same thing across the country, to go to these communities and say, how can renewable energy come in as a catalyst for development? So you and I know that, for example, if you have power, there's a lot you can do. We're having this conversation because, we are able to speak to each other in, a lit up environment. If you think of rural communities, there are farmers who today they are farming, but they're not able to get their produce to the markets because on the one hand, maybe they are struggling with transportation. So renewable energy can come in to ensure that, for example, with the solar power you have in those communities, you can power electric vehicles to take produce from those farms to where they can be processed. Now, when you get to where you're processing those produce, you can also leverage, clean energy technology to ensure that you have energy efficient processing machines for processing gari, for processing palm oil, and then you can package those and still leverage electric vehicles to take them to the market or to take them to international markets. So renewable energy comes in from a productivity angle to support rural economies. But that's just even on the economic side. What about on the social side? These communities are places where people, because of darkness at night, they mostly go into their houses. But with the light that comes in, people can meet each other. Communities can actually convene at night. Sometimes you see children, being able to play at night after they finish studying or before they study. So it helps the social environment in communities. It carries the youth along. It carries the women along. It carries the elderly along. And then even on the environmental side, right? You go to these communities, most times they use firewood to cook, but you have cleaner technologies like clean cooking. So renewables come in many ways to ensure that if we can, from the fringes, from the poorest of the people in the country, from those who the grid doesn't even get to because it's not, from a traditional point of view, it's not cost effective to extend the grid there. Sure. We can go and use distributed energy resources in those communities to ensure that we can include them. And I know that part of what NESG is keen on is to ensure that we have an open economy that is sustainable and that there is inclusion. So imagine how you can go into those communities, include those who we haven't included in, in terms of how we understand our GDP, and then our GDP can really grow because they have the basic infrastructure, which is electricity access, which is an enabler for so much more.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, this throws up two questions. First, is there any cost burden on those local communities? Then second, since these are people who basically grew up with using fossil fuels, is there any pushback from them in terms of some of the vision you have to make them embrace renewable energy across the value chain?
So I would say, the secret sauce here is really what we call community engagement. Community engagement means you identify a community that hasn't had electricity before, you go to the community and you engage. Who is the village head? Who is the community leader? How do you speak to that person to say, look, we need to work with you to include, all the stakeholders in the community? Who is the woman leader? Because women have a voice and their voice needs to be heard. Who is the youth leader? Who is the oldest person in the community? Can we all sit down, have a community power committee that we can engage with you to, help you understand that, first of all, you don't need to live in darkness, right? Because the government is doing a lot to ensure that communities like you get out of darkness and become part of, powering productivity in Nigeria. And then helping them to understand that renewable energy technologies like mini grids, which people are not aware of, are something that can actually make the difference. And what are mini grids? Mini grids are simply what we have in the greater society, where you have solar panels, inverters, and batteries, but most times now it's on the larger scale. And you'll be surprised that with these solutions, coupled for a community, where you have that generating power for the community, and then you have poles distributing the power, you can have welders, right, to now be able to reduce their cost of, you know, welding in the community. You can build more homes in the community. You can have traders to process more, right? They can take more to the market. You can be able to store even, you know, produce that will have been lost due to post-harvest losses, like maybe fishes that have been harvested. You can store them in cold rooms because you now have electricity in those communities. So renewable energy has a whole lot more impact that it can actually give. And I think a lot of awareness is being created. Maybe it's not at the level that Nigerians, you know, will be able to appreciate to really, you know, like you said, switch over and adapt to. But I believe that a lot of effort is already being made, and very soon that awareness will be created on a wide scale.
Awesome. We certainly look forward to that. Now, this brings me to sustainability, because typically you find that there's little inclusion in that space. Traditionally, women don't want to get involved in energy-related, you know, work and all of that. So now you've partnered the REA for, you know, STEM projects that I've seen you visit, include several universities, take 20 women and train them, you know, about STEM careers and all that. Can you tell us about that?
I wouldn't say women don't have interest in energy-related work. Maybe we would say, typically, you know, if you go to the most universities and look at the classroom for engineering or for sciences, sometimes you have more males than women, and there's that disproportionate advantage there for males. So what the Rural Education Agency has done is to come up with a program where they said, you know what, for us to catalyze change, how do we start with maybe about 7 universities spread across the country, in Yobe, in Abia, in Ogun State, even in the Nigerian Defense Academy in Kaduna, to say, let's take 20 females in each of these 7 institutions, so about 140 females. Now imagine taking these females, and imagine if these females, you know, impact about 20 other females in the long term. There's already a ripple effect, right? But how do we take them, train them on renewable energy? Because already in their institutions, there are renewable energy solutions. Like, there are large solar plants being built in those institutions to be able to ensure that they are more sustainable. Right, and that is already where the future leaders of Nigeria will be trained to understand that solar can actually power their universities. So you have the effect that in the next 10 years, the leaders of the society are people who can say, yes, when I was in university, there was a time when solar was actually able to power my university. But how do we ensure that women are made to, you know, understand their role in society and be able to have interest? So that was part of our project, to ensure that we supported the REA in training about 20 female students in 7 universities across the country. And there are already plans to scale that up to ensure that in terms of gender balancing and gender mainstreaming, more women are brought into this, because sustainability definitely includes inclusion, and women have to be included.
How often do you do this, and what are the criteria, just so people can know, our viewers can know, what are the criteria for selection, and for those who study in those 7 universities? Could you mention some of them?
Like, oh yes, so there is university in Abeokuta, there is the Federal University in Abeokuta, there is the Federal University in Abia, in Umudike, there's Nigerian Defense Academy, there's even the University of Abuja here. Okay. We also had that impact felt in Borno as well, and Yobe State. But in terms of criteria, really, I mean, you really want to ensure that people that you're giving this rare opportunity have an interest. So the methodology for selecting the students is a very rigorous one, where they have to express their interest, explain why they have an interest, explain what they would do with the knowledge they would gain. And we have been able to ensure that the people that we selected were the best in terms of aligning with the vision and being able to make sure that in the future they can actually be catalysts for, you know, enabling more women inclusion in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, which is the STEM where a lot of women are lacking in the country.
Awesome. It's nice to know that CISOLA is really, you know, breaking barriers, because like I mentioned earlier, most companies are profit-seeking, but then if you can complement that with this sort of CSR initiative, I'll call it, it's really laudable for carbon emission efforts to retrace carbon emissions. So now, by 2060, we anticipate that the carbon footprint will have been rolled back in Nigeria. Is it ambitious? Is it possible? Or are we just hoping that something like that can happen?
Well, I would say nothing is impossible, and I hope that most of us will be there to really see that it is very possible. I think, like I said earlier on, thinking differently and acting differently is also now very important, because how do we walk backwards from 2060 to say, if we have this vision by 2060, what are the necessary actions we need to take today to get there? And if at all we are getting off track, how do we ensure that we get ourselves on track? To achieve our vision by 2060, it is postulated that by the Sustainable Energy for All, that we need about $1.9 trillion just to achieve that. So imagine the scale of investment needed year in, year out, and mostly even at this earlier stage to achieve that. But the great thing is that with about $750 million from the World Bank and other funding sources from African Development Bank, and what that would do to catalyze private sector investment in the country, there is already a market that's growing. And I think the funding that will be needed to close that gap with something that we can actually achieve in our lifetime.
Awesome. Thank you very much. We'll be speaking with Engineer Chibesi Eke. He is the CEO of C-Solar. Like he has rightly mentioned, we're all part of the effort to decarbonize Nigeria. It's very, very possible, but it starts with our mindset. We have to change everything we've been doing to fossilize Nigeria. We are not so far gone that we cannot retrace our footsteps, but we just have to be willing to change. And it's a value chain issue. The government has to be involved. As individuals, we're all involved. Businesses are involved. If we all come together, we can achieve net zero emissions by 2060. Thank you very much once again. And for our viewers, don't forget to subscribe, like, and share.